We're starting chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Draco's Detour. Harry remained within the confines of the Burrow's garden over the next few weeks. He spent most of his days playing two-a-side Quidditch in the Weasley's orchard. He and Hermione against Ron and Ginny. Hermione was dreadful and Ginny good, so they were reasonably well matched. That's really arrogant. Was there any indication Harry's actually good at the parts of the game other than
seeking? Yeah, I remember at the beginning when he's learning, he goes, "Oh, very good, Harry. You'd be a fair beater."
Oh, all right, fair enough.
He's also like the best flyer at their school.
Right, right. And his evenings eating triple helpings of everything Mrs. Weasley put in front of him. It would have been a happy, peaceful holiday if it had not been for the stories of disappearances, odd accidents, and even deaths now appearing almost daily in the Prophet. Sometimes Bill and Mr. Weasley brought home news before it even reached the paper. To Mrs. Weasley's displeasure, Harry's 16th birthday celebrations were marred by the grisly tidings brought to the party by Remus Lupin, who was looking gaunt and grim, his brown hair streaked liberally with gray, his clothes more ragged and patched than ever. "There have been another couple of Dementor attacks," he announced, as Mrs. Weasley passed him a large slice of birthday cake. "And they found Igor Karkaroff's body in a shack up north. The dark mark had been set over it. Well, frankly, I'm surprised he stayed alive for even a year after deserting the Death Eaters. Sirius's brother, Regulus, only managed a few days, as far as I can remember." "Yes, well," said Mrs. Weasley, frowning, "perhaps we should talk about something different." "Did you hear about Florence Fortescue, Remus?" asked Bill, who was being plied with wine by Fleur. "The man who ran the ice cream place at Diagon Alley?" Harry interrupted with an unpleasant hollow sensation in the pit of his stomach. "He used to give me free ice cream. What happened?" "Dragged off by the look of the place." "Why?" asked Ron. Well, Mrs. Weasley glared pointedly at Bill. "Who knows? He must have upset them somehow. He was a good man, Florian." "Talking of Diagon Alley," said Mr. Weasley, "it looks like Ollivander is gone too." "The Wandmaker?" said Ginny, looking startled. "That's the one. Shop's empty. No sign of a struggle. No one knows whether he left voluntarily or was kidnapped." "But wands? What'll people do for wands?" "They'll make do with other makers," said Lupin, "but Ollivander was the best, and if the other side's got him, it's not so good for us." The day after this rather gloomy birthday tea, their letters and book lists arrived from Hogwarts. Harry's included a surprise. He'd been made Quidditch captain. "That'll give you equal status with prefects," cried Hermione happily. "You can use our special bathroom now and everything." "Wait, are they have one bathroom?"
She insinuating?
I don't know.
I think Hermione wants Harry to use her bathroom.
I'm not gonna go there.
I love you, kitten. "Wow, I remember when Charlie was one of those," said Ron, examining the badge with glee. "Harry, this is so cool, you're my captain. If you let me back on the team, I suppose. Ha ha. Well, I don't suppose we can put off a trip to Diagon Alley much longer now that you've got these," sighed Mrs. Weasley, looking down at Ron's book list. "We'll go on Saturday, as long as your father doesn't have to go to work then. I'm not going there without him." "Mom, do you honestly think you know who's going to be hiding behind a bookshelf in Flourishing Plots?" snickered Ron. "Fortescue and Ollivander went on holiday, did they?" said Mrs. Weasley, firing up at once. "If you think security's a laughing matter, you can stay behind and I'll get the things myself." "No, I want to come. I want to see Fred and George's shop," said Ron hastily. "Then you just buck up your ideas, young man, before I decide you're too immature to come with us," said Mrs. Weasley angrily, snatching up her clock, all nine hands of which were still pointing at mortal peril, and balancing it on top of a pile of just-laundered towels. "And that goes for returning to Hogwarts as well." Ron turned to stare incredulously at Harry as his mother hoisted the laundry basket and the teetering clock into her arms and stormed out of the room. Blimey, he can't even make a joke around here anymore. But Ron was careful not to be flippant about Voldemort the next few days. Saturday dawned without any more outbursts from Mrs. Weasley. though she seemed very tense at breakfast. Bill, who would be staying at home with Fleur, much to Hermione and Ginny's displeasure, passed a full money bag across the table to Harry. "Where's mine?" demanded Ron at once, his eyes wide. "That's already Harry's, idiot," said Bill. "I got it out of your vault for you, Harry, because it's taking about 5 hours for the public to get their gold at the moment. The goblins have tightened security so much." How does everyone have access to Harry's vault?
I know.
Like,
it's a little weird.
I got this gold for you, Harry. It's from your vault. Oh, thanks. That really saved me some time.
Yeah. Also, what else did you take?
Yeah. The goblins have tightened security so much. Yeah, so that Bill can go in and get Harry's gold.
He works there.
Yeah, but still, like, you can't get... 2 days ago, Archie Philpott had a probity probe stuck up his... Well, trust me, this way it's easier. "Thanks, Bill," said Harry, pocketing his gold. You know, I have to get... I'm very bad at the French, so I have to... It takes me a while to even think French. "He's always so thoughtful," purred Fleur adoringly, stroking Bill's nose. That was all? Just one sentence? See, when she says a lot, I can sort of get into it. But if it's just one sentence... Ginny mimed vomiting into her cereal behind Fleur. Harry choked over his cornflakes, and Ron thumped him on the back. Doesn't help. It was an overcast, murky day. One of the special Ministry of Magic cars in which Harry had ridden once before was awaiting them in the front yard when they emerged from the house, pulling on their cloaks. "It's good Dad can get us these," said Ron appreciatively, stretching luxuriously as the car moved smoothly away from the burrow, Bill and Fleur waving from the kitchen window. He, Harry, Hermione, and Ginny were all sitting in the roomy comfort in the wide back seat. "Don't get used to it, it's only because of Harry," said Mr. Weasley over his shoulder. He and Mrs. Weasley were in the front with the ministry driver. The front passenger seat had obligingly stretched into what resembled a two-seater sofa. "He's been given top-grade security status, and will be joining up with additional security at Leaky Cauldron, too." Harry said nothing. He did not much fancy doing his shopping while surrounded by a battalion of orders. He had stowed his invisibility cloak in his backpack, and felt that if that was good enough for Dumbledore, it ought to be good enough for the ministry. But now that he came to think of it, he was not sure if the ministry knew about his cloak. "Here are, then," said the driver, surprisingly short while later, speaking for the first time as he slowed in Charing Cross Road. Oh, do you remember Charing Cross? Charing Cross?
Yeah.
And stopped outside the...
Charing Cross Station.
Yep. "I'm to wait for you. Any idea how long you'll be?" "A couple of hours, I expect," said Mr. Weasley. "Ah, good, he's here. Come on. Are you a snuggle kitten?" Harry imitated Mr. Weasley and peered through the window. His heart leapt. There were no Aurors waiting outside the inn, but instead the gigantic bearded form of Rubius Hagrid, the Hogwarts gamekeeper, wearing a long beaver skin coat, beaming at the sight of Harry's face and oblivious to the startled stares of passing muggles. "Harry," he boomed, sweeping Harry into a bone-crushing hug. Bone-crushing. The moment Harry stepped outside the car. "Buckbeak. Witherwings, I mean. Yeah, you should see him. Harry, he's so happy to be back in the open air. And Hagrid's really good at remembering anything." "Glad he's pleased," said Harry, grinning as he massaged his ribs. "We didn't know security meant you." "I know, just like old times, isn't it? See the ministry once and a bunch of ours. But Dumbledore said I'd do," said Hagrid proudly, throwing out his chest and tucking his thumbs into his pockets. "Let's get going, then. After you, Molly, Arthur." The Leaky Cauldron was, for the first time in Harry's memory, completely empty. Only Tom the landlord, wizened and toothless, remained of the old crowd. He looked up hopefully as they entered, but just before he could speak, Hagrid said importantly, "Just passing through today, Tom. I'm sure you understand. Hogwarts business, you know." Tom nodded gloomily and returned to wiping glasses. Harry, Hermione, and Hagrid, and the Weasleys walked through the bar and out into the chilly little courtyard in the back where the dustbins stood. Hagrid raised his pink umbrella and wrapped a certain brick in the wall. which opened at once to form an archway onto a winding cobble street. They passed through the entrance and paused, looking around. Diagon Alley had changed. The colorful, glittering window displays of spellbooks, potion ingredients, and cauldrons were lost to view, hidden behind the large Ministry of Magic posters that had been pasted over them. Most of these somber purple posters carried blown-up versions of the security advice on the Ministry pamphlets that had been sent out over the summer, but others bore the moving black-and-white photographs of Death Eaters known to be on the loose. Bellatrix Lestrange was sneering from the front of the nearest apothecary. A few windows were boarded up, including those of Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor. On the other hand, a number of shabby-looking stalls had sprung up along the street. The nearest one, which had been erected outside Flourishing Plots under a striped, stained awning, had a cardboard sign pinned on its front. Amulets, effective against werewolves, dementors, and infera. A seedy-looking little wizard was rattling armfuls of silver symbols and chains at passerbys. "One for your little girl, madam," he called at Mrs. Weasley as they passed, leering at Ginny. "Protect her pretty neck." "If I were on duty," said Mr. Weasley, glaring angrily at the amulet seller. "Yes, but don't go arresting anyone now, dear. We're in a hurry," said Mrs. Weasley, nervously consulting the list. "I think we'd better do Madame Malkin's first. Hermione wants new dress robes, and Ron's showing too much ankle in his school robes." The ladies will be unable to contain themselves. "And you must need new ones too, Harry. You've grown so much. Come on, everyone." "You're beautiful. You're snuggly kitten." "Yeah. Molly, it doesn't make sense for all of us to go to Madame Milken's," said Mr. Weasley. "Why can't these three go with Hagrid, and we can go to Flourishing Plots and give everyone school books?" "I don't know," said Mrs. Weasley anxiously, clearly torn between the desire to finish the shopping quickly and the wish to stick together in a pack. "Hagrid, do you think..." "Don't fret, they'll be fine with me, Molly," said Hagrid soothingly, waving an airy hand the size of a dustbin lid. Mrs. Weasley did not look entirely convinced, but allowed the separation, scurrying off toward Flourishing Plots with her husband and Ginny, while Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Hagrid set off for Madame Malkin's. Harry noticed that many of the people who passed them had the same harried, anxious look that Mrs. Weasley had, and nobody was stopping to talk anymore. The shoppers stayed together in their own tightly knit groups, moving intently about their business. Nobody seemed to be shopping alone. "Might be a bit of a squeeze in there with all of us," said Hagrid, stopping outside of Madame Malkin's and bending down to peer through the window. "I'll stand guard outside, all right?" So Harry, Ron, and Hermione entered the little shop together. It appeared, at first glance, to be empty, but no sooner had the door swung shut behind them than they heard a familiar voice issuing from behind a rack of dress robes in a spangled green and blue. "Not a child, in case you haven't noticed, Mother. I'm perfectly capable of shopping alone." There was a cluck noise and a voice Harry recognized as that of Madame Malkin, the owner, saying, "Now, dear, your mother's quite right. None of us is supposed to be wandering around on our own anymore. It's nothing to do with being a child. Watch where you're sticking that pin, will you?" A teenage boy with pale, pointed face and white blonde hair appeared from behind the rack, wearing a handsome set of dark green robes that glittered with pins around the hem and the edges of the sleeves. He strode to the mirror and examined himself. It was a few moments before he noticed Harry, Ron, and Hermione reflected over his shoulder. His light gray eyes narrowed. "If you're wondering what the smell is, Mother, a mudblood just walked in," said Draco Malfoy. "I don't think there's any need for language like that," said Madame Malkin, scurrying out from behind the clothes rack and holding up a tape measure and a wand. "And I don't want wands drawn in my shop either," she added hastily, for a glance toward the door had shown Harry and Ron both standing there with their wands out and pointing at Malfoy. Hermione, who was standing slightly behind them, whispered, "No, don't. It's not worth it." "Yeah, like you dare do magic outside of school," sneered Malfoy. "Who blacked your eye, Granger? I want to send them flowers." "That's quite enough," said Madame Malkin sharply, looking over her shoulder for support. "Madam, please." Narcissa Malfoy strolled out from behind the clothes rack. "Put those away," she said coldly to Ron and Harry. "If you attack my son again, I shall ensure that is the last thing you ever do." "Really?" said Harry, taking a step forward and gazing into the smoothly arrogant face for all its pallor, still resembled her sister's. He was as tall as she was now. "Going to get a few Death Eater pals to do sin, are you?" Madame Malkin squealed and clutched her heart. "Really, you shouldn't accuse. Dangerous thing to say. Wands away, please." But Harry did not lower his wand. Narcissa Malfoy smiled unpleasantly. "I see that being Dumbledore's favorite has given you a false sense of security, Harry Potter, but Dumbledore won't always be there to protect you." Harry looked mockingly all around the shop. "Wow, look at that. He's not here now. So why not have a go? They might be able to find you a double cell in Azkaban with your loser of a husband." Malfoy made an angry movement toward Harry, but stumbled over his overlong robe. Ron laughed loudly. "Don't you dare talk to my mother like that, Potter," Malfoy snarled. "It's all right, Draco," Narcissa said, restraining him, with her thin white fingers upon his shoulder. "I expect Potter will be reunited with dear Sirius before I am reunited with Lucius." Harry raised his wand higher. "Harry, no," moaned Hermione, grabbing his arm and attempting to push it down by his side. "Think, you mustn't. You'll be in such trouble." Madame Malkin dithered for a moment on the spot, then just seemed to decide to act as though nothing had happened in the hope that it wouldn't. She bent toward Malfoy, who was glaring at Harry. "I think this left sleeve could come up a bit more, dear. Just let me." "Ouch," bellowed Malfoy, slapping her hand away. "Watch where you're putting those pins, woman. Mother, I don't think I want these anymore." He pulled the robes over his head and threw them onto the floor at Madame Malkin's feet. "You're right, Draco," said Narcissa, now with a contemptuous glance at Hermione. "Now I know the kind of scum that shops here. We'll do better at Twilfit and Tattings." And with that, the pair of them strode out of the shop, taking care to bang as hard as he could into Ron on the way out. "Well, really," said Madame Malkin, snatching up the fallen robes and moving the tip of her wand over them, like a vacuum cleaner, so it removed all the dust. She was distracted all through the fitting of Ron and Harry's new robes, tried to sell Hermione's wizard's dress robes instead of witches, and when she finally bowed them out of the shop, it was with the air of being glad to see the back of them. "Got everything?" said Hagrid brightly, when they reappeared at his side. "Just about," said Harry. "Did you see the Malfoys?" "Yes," said Hagrid, unconcerned. "But they wouldn't dare make trouble in the middle of Diagon Alley, Harry. Don't worry about them." Harry, Ron, and Hermione exchanged looks, but before they could disabuse Hagrid of this comfortable notion, Mr. and Mrs. Weasley and Ginny appeared, all clutching heavy packages of books. "Everyone all right?" said Mrs. Weasley. "Got your robes? Right then, we can pop into the apothecary and Elips on the way to Fred and George's. Stick close now." Neither Harry nor Ron bought any ingredients at the apothecary, seeing that they were no longer studying potions. But both brought large boxes of owls, nuts for Hagrid, a Hedwig and Pigwidgeon, at Elup's Owl Emporium. Then, with Mrs. Weasley checking her watch every minute or so, they headed farther along the street in search of Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, the joke shop run by Fred and George. "We really haven't gone too long," said Mrs. Weasley, "so we'll just have a quick look around and then back to the car. We must be close. That's number 92, 94. "Whoa," said Ron, stopping in his tracks. Set against the dull poster-muffled shop fronts around them, Fred and George's windows hit the eye like a fireworks display. Casual passerbys were looking over their shoulders at the windows. A few rather stunned-looking people had actually come to a halt, transfixed. The left-hand window was dazzlingly full of an assortment of goods that revolved, popped, flashed, bounced, trooped. Harry's eyes began to water just looking at it. The right-hand window was covered with a gigantic poster, purple like those of the Ministry, but emblazoned with flashing yellow letters. Why are you worrying about you-know-who? You should be worrying about you-know-poo, the constipation sensation that's gripping the nation. Harry started to laugh. He heard a weak sort of moan behind him and looked around to see Mrs. Weasley gazing dumbfounded at the poster. Her lips moved silently, mouthing the name you-know-poo. "They'll be murdered in their beds," she whispered. "No, they won't," said Ron, who, like Harry, was laughing. "This is brilliant." Oh, man. Maybe we should stop.
Okay.
Okay. So they're about to go into the shop, and I think we'll stop there.
I hope you like that kitten, Boom.
So good night to the kitten who's sleeping and reading this later.
Good night.
You're such a beautiful, wonderful kitten. I love you so much.